We know many of you listen to this podcast on the go, driving to work, working out, even doing chores. Now you can get CPE credit for that time. With Earmark, you can earn free NASBA-approved CPE for listening to the Inside Public Accounting podcast. After you listen to an episode, take a quiz, and your certificate will be ready. Earmark has courses for everyone in your firm, from staff to partners. Get started today at earmark.app or download the free app on the App Store.
Forget just keeping the books balanced. Today, we're talking about how firms can actually change the game, because things like advisory and mastering the technology, it's not now anymore. It is the future. We've got Mike Hajak with us today, and he's going to show us how to keep our firms in future-ready order and make that leap. Mike's built a successful career helping clients beyond compliance into true business consulting. It's great to have a guest on with us. This is Inside Public Accounting. I'm your host, Rob Brown. Chelsea Summers is taking a day off, but we've got lots to dive into, and we love giving you the stories behind the numbers. Mike Hajak, welcome to the show.
Hey, thank you very much, Rob. Nice to be here.
How long have you been in the game, Mike?
29 years.
Has it changed much?
You know, it really has, and it hasn't. The fundamentals of accounting are the same. People need to get a service done, and it's a service business. It has gotten a lot more customer-centric in the last, say, 7 to 10 years, where the customer is driving a little bit more than it used to. It used to be open the doors and they will come.
Yeah.
You know, now you've got firms that are really specializing in different areas and making sure that they serve the customers that they enjoy serving.
Yeah. Well, let's cut straight to it. The IPA 2025 data shows that CAS-heavy firms grew 12.5% versus 11.3% for non-CAS-related firms, but the partners take home $130,000 less on average. Does that trade-off match with the expectations coming from what you're seeing?
Well, you know, the history of CAS, you know, let's just step back a little bit.
Yeah, that's good. Give us a little bit of history.
You know, in
just define CAS for the audience, Mike, the sure. ones hiding under stones that haven't come across CAS.
CAS is, well, I guess we still step back. Bookkeeping was kind of where it all started. You know, right. We did this thing called write-up, which was after-the-fact accounting. Customers got the information a month late, and it was more of a record-keeping process. 4 or 5 years ago, really started to move it, especially during COVID when there was no choice, really started to move to this client advisory service where you're active, you're being proactive, you're getting your financial statements in a real-time environment. And that's where the client really started to look at it and say, you know what, we can deal with a CPA firm or an accounting firm that's doing this because it's real-time. So that client advisory service has really increased since COVID. And then there's on top of that, then I believe there's advisory. So there's kind of three levels now that you find. And I think you're going to find even more specificity in the future over different services. But that's kind of where we are today.
Well, that stat that came out was that CAS is growing, but the revenue's not growing. So what are people getting wrong when it comes to moving maybe from CAS to true consulting?
Well, I think that they're not realizing that CAS is like this beautiful granite foundation, because bookkeeping was just record keeping, and it was behind the scenes, and it was late, and we didn't really give the best service level to the client. CAS is the first step, in my opinion, that the businesses actually are looking at the CPA firm and saying, wow, you're giving me real-time numbers. It's either onshore, offshore, that's kind of irrelevant. It's just that I'm getting that piece of information. Yeah. I think the confusion happens when they say advisory, because the client's expectation is that the CAS is the beginning, not the end. So you have to take what you do on the CAS system where you've got good financials, and then the customer wants advice about how to run their business. What are their tax effects? How does it affect my family? All the different things that advisory, I believe, is going to be the future, but it's a stepping stone. Firms have to first get into CAS, feel comfortable there. Then they've got to be reaching out to those customers and talking about the things that really matter to the customer.
What a sense, Mike, that many firms think they're already delivering CAS. You know, like, how a lot of the tech and software vendors will put AI integrated into their product specifications, but it's really not. It's a bit of data scraping or it's a chatbot or something, but they really feel that they're doing it. So do you get a sense that CAS is such a movement right now that these accountants, they do think they're advisors. They do think they're being proactive. They do think they're giving clients what they want.
Well, I think it's scope. If you were giving a client something 45 days late 10 years ago, and now you're giving it to them by the 10th of every month,
yeah,
that's heroic, right? So I think that's where we are right now in this system. And we've got, you know, if you will, a sister firm in Texas, and they're fabulous at what they do. They are a full CAS system, and they just have nailed it. But they will tell you the advisory piece is next. So that's what we're starting to see, is that once we get to full, you know, CAS, I think what's going to happen with the firms now, you know, yeah, you're right. AI can tell you that you're 12% up or down from an expense. And it can say to you that, you know, why haven't you spent this money last year? You spent that in the same time frame. Mm-hmm. But that's not what the customer's looking for. What the customer wants to hear is, hey, you know what? Yes, you are up in your merchant services, but you know what? Here's four people that do merchant services. I'm going to help you negotiate that. I'm going to help you with that process, and we're going to save money as a team together. That's where CAS starts to step in, really being proactive, number one, and also helping with the implementation. The client doesn't have the time to do the implementation. They want a trusted advisor that understands this, has scope of service to help them and implement with them.
I'm going to ask you a question with some stats in a moment that might point to a pricing issue, because we know a lot of accountants struggle with the pricing of consulting and advisory services. But in the latest IPA survey, firms over 50 million reported a 44% of revenue came from consulting. But in firms under 10 million, that was only 27% came from consulting. So I'm just wondering, is that a pricing thing? Well, what would be the most realistic first step for these smaller firms who want to narrow that gap?
Well, I think that they have to realize that if you're replacing, and what we're starting to see now, and originally it was small firms had no bookkeeper, so they went to an accounting firm to get this write-up or bookkeeping service.
Yeah.
Today, what we're seeing is firms are saying, you know what, I've got three people in accounting, and I could go to an accounting firm and get the whole thing done in real time. And that's the transition you're seeing. I think larger firms have the size and the scope to take on the bigger clients that want that. Smaller firms still haven't made that commitment. And back to my friends in Texas, they've made that commitment about 5 years ago. And they just replaced, a sizable firm. And you really start to drive revenue. Their revenue is being driven each year by 25 to 35% growth. Because they're starting to move up channel for those firms that are one and two and three people in accounting, and they can't find them. And that's the biggest problem, is there just not a lot of bookkeepers out there as there was, say, 7 to 10 years ago.
And I'm curious about the infrastructure and what's required to make a firm really an advisory. For instance, IPA reported that advisory-focused firms, say in the top 200 to 300, so the smaller firms, if you like, but still doing well, that they show higher income growth than the top 100, but their staffing structures are different. They've maybe got more client managers, more pod models, different ways of recruiting, a more niche brand, more maybe localized or fixed in communities. So talk us through how you see the people and the process mix evolving if firms really want to scale advisory.
Well, there's two parts, I think. The first step is the CAS. CAS is very repetitive. It needs to have a high sense of consistency, and it can be very good either on or offshore. And most firms have a mixture of onshore people that are at a higher level and offshore doing the basic rudimentary accounting.
You're speaking about outsourcing now, aren't you?
Well, most CAS systems use a portion of on and offshore to combine the service level, because the pricing would just get too high.
Yeah.
Advisory takes that next step. And what it says is, okay, now what we need is a whole different skill set. Because advisory is not worrying about getting the information done. Advisory is saying, okay, I've got that information. I've got the football. How do I move forward on the field? And you're going to have people that have some business knowledge or that can be trained in that. have some tax knowledge, and also can communicate to the client effectively. And that's part of what you start to see is it's a different skill set. And quite frankly, and I'll say this, but a lot of young people have that skill. Nice. They've been a little bit more worldly in their approach. They've seen different things than someone maybe in when I was coming up, and they can talk to similar age business owners. So you're starting to see that it's not only just the older people, it's the whole scope of accountant can talk to clients about their business.
That's a really interesting point, because as the world grows older, there's more and more entrepreneurial businesses coming through, and they don't want to be served by a 50, 60-year-old partner. They want to be served by someone that's young and vibrant and gets them and talks their language, understands their world. So the generational shift is happening, isn't it?
It is, and it's exciting, because what you're seeing is it's a place for the, you know, sub 40-year-old accountants and CPAs that are saying, you know what, I don't want to do the same old box that your dad did. I want to be able to do something a little bit different. And I think that's where a lot of the younger CPAs and staff members are going to say, you know what, I'm excited about doing advisory, but it's not advisory like it was done before. Yeah. So the older folk have to kind of shift and change.
I'm curious about this deciding what to keep in-house versus what to outsource. And the IPA data shows 63% of firms are planning to outsource more next year. If I understand it correctly, your firm chose to bring payroll back in-house. I'm just wondering how you weigh that up against the client experience when making a call like that.
So I want to be clear. For 15 years, I said I would never, ever, ever have a payroll company.
Yeah.
Because the profit margin on payroll is a lot lower. Uh-huh. But I will tell you that how we look at every different service line we have about 5 or 6 different service lines we brought inside. And the main reason we do that is, number one, the customer is getting confusing information in the marketplace. The service level is substantially lower than what you're going to find in our firm or an accounting firm. And number three, it's something that my other customers would say, you know what, Mike, if you guys do this, I feel confident just hooking it on to your advisory services, because I have one person now to do 4, 5, or 6 different services. And I think this vertical integration, which is new in accounting, I think you're going to find it to be something that firms are doing. There's some larger firms out there that actually do it, big firms, because they have scope. But you're not seeing it in the smaller firms, some 10 million, 15 million. But I think you're going to start to see that, because the customer says, look, I would rather go to one stop. I'm done being a quarterback. I want to hire you to be the quarterback.
Yeah.
I want to run my business. And that's the shift we're seeing now.
It's beautiful on this show, Mike, that we've got somebody on like you too, that is on the coal face, if you like. You're out there doing it. It's great to hear it. I'm just thinking, you mentioned the word scope there. Nearly half of IPA firms that submit their data say that client culling, scope control, these are now formal strategies for firms. You've obviously tackled scope creep. You've probably got engagement letters, staff bonuses, all kinds of things. What advice would you give to the firms watching, listening, to be more systemized about this?
So this one's going to be a little bit of a stretch for a lot of people. but the accounting profession's a pyramid. It was partners on top, staff on the bottom, and you kind of took your steps all the way up along the chain.
And you served your time, Mike, didn't you? You were chained to a desk for 15 years, and you might make partner if you're lucky. But stick around.
I'll save my story for later. I had a road less traveled too. So, you know, what we find now is you've got to, we call it internally, you know, the firm of one. And what that means is that you have to focus the skill set on the person you hire, not on the position you hire.
Okay.
So we may have a 30-year-old 5-year staff person that just happens to be great at communication and talking to business owners their same age, but they may not have the technical side. And in a traditional firm, that person would be stuck in a little triangle box, right? Just over here in the corner. What we're finding is we motivate them by saying, you know what, your skill sets are here. Let's develop something around your skill set that can serve the firm, can generate profit, and the customer's happy about it. But as far as scope creep, it's everywhere in consulting. And we came up a couple couple of years ago, and I don't even want to take credit for this. One of my younger staff members came to me and said, you know what? If you offered me a little bonus every time I told the customer this is scope creep and I added $500 a month to the bill, I think I'd be motivated. And so I said, sure, let's do it. And then about a year later, he came back and said, you know what? This is working so well. We want to bring it, you know, across the whole firm. So that's how one of the ways we do is we listen to what they're saying to us, you know, our staff and our people that work with us, and say, how can we make it easier for them to do their job? And a lot of people kind of may rub them the wrong way because it's supposed to be, you know, partner down. What you're starting to see is that in consulting, it's kind of reverse, that the consultants are in the middle of the process. We've got senior tax managers and people helping on the top, quality control. You've got administrative on the bottom, and the firm actually runs in the middle. So it's a whole different way to look at how you run an accounting firm.
Inside Public Accounting reported this year that revenue per full-time employee has hit a record $220,000. So there's a lot of efficiencies at play. Talk to us about how you balance the drive for productivity with things like client education and advisory demands.
Well, I think there's a different part of this. One of the things that I'd love to see from IPA is to break this down a little further, because if you just give a number for the whole firm, it sometimes is misleading, because you have inside of every firm, you may have multiple different areas. So if they're predominantly doing, assurance services, that number could be higher because the billing is very high, but the profit's very low. So you just got to watch how you look at those numbers. But what I'm finding is in consulting, because it's more pay for a service as opposed to compliance work, your numbers are substantially higher than that. You're in a more advisory firm, you're seeing numbers north of 300. And I think, and I'll say this out loud, I think you're going to have a firm in the future that 300 is going to be the new number, because the firms are starting to realize that it's very difficult to make money in just flat 1040s. It's very difficult to make money unless you're hyper efficient in the CAS system. Unless you add additional services. So one of the things I love to quote Rob Nixon, great guy, says that, you know, if you're not selling your client at least five or six services, you've got to review what you're doing. And I think those things, consulting, advisory, along with serving your client with more services, is going to push us over that 300 limitation in the next couple of years.
That's very good. Shout out to Rob Nixon. He definitely calls it out, doesn't he?
He doesn't. Yeah, he does. Withstand. I like.
So, great guy. Let's get your crystal ball out, Mike, and look at the future of advisory. IPA reported that more than 20% of firms in their latest survey said advisory is now their fastest growing service line. And you predicted yourself that it would become a platinum service, if I can put that mantle on it. How does the data miss out from IPA? There's a lot more behind the data, but what's missing there about where we're heading?
I think that, and I've had a lot of conversation over this subject because of the fact that we're 90% advisory.
You're doing 93. It. Yeah.
It's a separate firm. It's almost impossible, unless you're just very dedicated to starting an advisory practice inside of a regular firm, because there's all those political things that happen in firms that are structured against advisory. Advisory moves faster. It needs better communication. You need a higher level of infrastructure. So I think firms that are ready to take that step, and ironically, I'm seeing younger firms do it because they don't have all that ingrained stuff in there. That's what we're starting to see, is that it's a heavy infrastructure process, but it also returns a tremendous return on investment if you're willing to invest in that process.
Tell us about your journey, Mike. Did you wake up one morning and think, I want to be purely advisory in my firm? I hate the compliance grind. Or was this an evolution? Give us a flavor of that.
I always go back to this story. We were in the grocery store one day, my wife and I, and this lady comes up and she's like, Mike, you know, thank you so much. You know, you saved me, whatever it was. Big hug. I whisper to my wife, who was that person? And that's when we had, you know, 1,000 1040s and little baby businesses. Yeah. And we've been in business about, I don't know, maybe 7 or 8 years. And we really did not have satisfaction. That kind of coupled with one of my biggest clients came to me and said, listen, I'm going to potentially sell. I'd like to, you know, get you to help me with all the negotiations and everything like that. And I'm like, you know, Bill, I'm not built that way. I got 10,000 returns I got to get out. I can't just sit in a room and listen.
Yeah.
But then he said to me, you know, listen, this is really important to me. And we rearranged some things and I spent about 3 weeks with him going through the sale process. And that was kind of the evolution. That was the start of the process. And then about 2 years later, we kind of moved completely away from the day-to-day accounting. Took us about 5 years to get completely done. I'll be honest. You know, I kept that mentality that Mrs. Jones, the one that did the 1040, she made me what I was. I owed that to her. And we set up a second accounting firm to handle those clients. And then for about 20 years now, we've been full-time advisory.
Tell us about the journey of Mike Hajak. You look pretty young now. It's obviously been a really easy life for you. But if you take us back to you as an 18, 20-year-old or getting started in the game and where you find yourself right now, how have you changed and adapted?
Well, I was licensed at 31.
Okay. You were a late bloomer.
Late bloomer. Took a road less traveled and worked for accounting firms, regional firms, and a little bit of a recession on the second firm I worked for. And I was, you know, I was motivated to start my own business, which was that there was no check coming in on Friday. And that's how we started. And it was just a traditional firm. You know, if you walked in the door, I would serve you. And you know, the evolution was probably the biggest hit was about 96 or 7 or 8
yeah.
when there was a little bit of a recession. And I lost 30% of my businesses because they were like, you know, they couldn't pay the bills. And I realized that that process was part of how the business was built. And we spent years trying to figure out what's a better way to do it. And that's how we ended up getting into advisory. And quite frankly, it has been not work. It has been just a ton of fun because you get to enjoy all the things that your clients are part of. You get to be included in everything. But instead of having 1,000 clients, you have 100 or 120. And that's where I think a lot of CPA firms really struggle is that they want to have this relationship. They want to give advice, but they're stuck in this wheel. And it's tough to get out.
An advisory is not for every client, is it, Mike? Or do you argue that it is?
No. Advisory is for the client that really wants to make a difference and they really want to understand what they're doing. They may be in a heavy growth mode, or frankly, they may say, you know what? I just want my trusted advisor to handle this for me and to give me these pieces of advice that I need without retribution of being ignorant. Because I find a lot of owners will say, you know, I've thought about this 20 times, but I don't know who to ask.
Yeah.
And I think that's what you're finding. So maybe 10% of the business population, 15% of the business population would like this. There's another 15 or 20 that want it, but don't realize and will not accept the cost change.
Right.
And I want to be clear, the cost change is substantial. And these firms have to realize that they've got to look their customer in the eye and say, yeah, you're paying me, you know, whatever, a dollar for the 1040 and a dollar for your corporate, but I need $4 to advise. Yeah. You know, it's just a different scope of service.
There must be a lot of firms out there as well that need more consulting, but they don't know what it is. They've never heard about it. It's never been offered to them. If you asked them what advice and consulting was, they wouldn't have a clue, but they definitely need it. So there's a communication to the marketplace that needs to take place and an education, if you like, that the ZPA profession needs to be having with the business community out there to say, hey, we could do so much more for you.
I think that you're going to see that in the next 5 or 7 years. I would love to see a public education. Obviously, firms our size can't do that, but big firms can do this where they're educating the client on what they could get from consulting. You're not seeing that, you know, more of this, you know, having knowledge, a depth of knowledge. If you look at an average CPA, they may see 500, 600 businesses in a couple of years, where a client running a construction firm has three buddies and they talk a little bit of shop and half of it's maybe not so true. so that public addressing of the profession would be a fabulous thing, because we already have a great reputation. We've been able to keep our culture as CPAs. We've been able to keep our ability to be trusted, and we need to bridge that and tell them, you know what, we can be part of your firm, but not an owner, just an advisor.
What's the biggest thing happening at HEJAC and HEJAC CPAs right now?
Well, we're going into other areas that the client is asking for. We have completed financial planning. We're into payroll now, as you stated when we started. We have an insurance division where we help clients understand the complexities of all the insurance. But we're going to see some things in the future that are what I would consider to be cutting edge for United States, but they're all around the world. And one of them is a law firm. The clients want the service where they can go to one person and get everything. And I'm not familiar if you've talked about the advisory ABS, which is in Arizona, alternative business services, where law firms and CPA firms can actually serve the client together. And it's all around the world. You've got this everywhere. And where you are, the law firms and CPA firms are the same. You can go to one firm and get that service. So I think you're going to start to see a lot of that. Aprio, I believe, was the biggest one that just came out that purchased a law firm. And that's going in fantastic. The client wants synergy. They want advisors speaking to each other. So I think we're going to see that. And I also think you're going to start to see a lot more work or movement in the areas of putting together financial planning along with the CPA side. It kind of started a bunch of years ago, but still about only 30% of the firms, 35, 40% of the firms are doing advisory in the financial services. And that needs to be something that's pushed in the future.
Mike, I want to ask you for some advice for the owners, the leaders, people in positions of responsibility and influence to prepare their firm for the future. The average partner age, we spoke about generations earlier, in the firm submitting to the Inside Public Accounting data, it's dropped from 53 years old to 51. There's a 20 to 30% rise in people set to retire over the next decade. If you're advising the next generation of leaders, what's a mindset shift perhaps that they need to make the most?
I would say that, you know, this concept of the firm of one. You need to look at your staff members as what they do best and stop the triangle hierarchy. And it flattens the organization out. And I'll be the first to say maybe over 50 million or 40 million, it'll be tough. But you could be 10 or 15, 20 million and still have that ability to touch what each one of the individuals are good at. We're starting to see more of that. And also generalization. You know, we spent years putting everybody in a box. You know, you're going to be doing just SALT for 15 states, and that's all you're ever going to do. I think
good luck selling that to the next generation coming in.
Exactly. So I think what you're going to find is this generalization. I think you're going to find people trying to understand how businesses work, how the psychology of the business is. That's a big area that you're seeing. You know, firms 20 years ago, you would say, do this, and they would say, fine. Today, that's not how it happens. You talk to them and say, you know, you really want to do this. Well, let's talk about that. I don't understand that. I want to deeply understand why I'm doing something. So a lot more why today than there used to be. But what you're going to find is that you have a higher job satisfaction. And the key thing that I think CPA firms are missing is the turnover rate. Turnover is death to profit margin. It just is the death. And if you focus more on that retention model, and that retention model is not just income, it's not just pay. It's listening to their ideas, making sure that you understand that, you know what? They got here because that little cell phone, right? They've been educated since they were 14 or 13 or 10 or whatever the age is. And they have ideas too, and you got to listen to them. They're not all good. trust me. But I think that's the advice I'd give.
This is the Inside Public Accounting podcast, giving you the stories that really matter behind the numbers that count. And it's great to bring it to life with Mike Hajak today. Mike, I got one more question before you as we close. It's been a joy to have you with us today. If I were to make you the worldwide czar and overlord of the accounting profession, our industry, whatever you want to call it, and your job starts next Monday, what would be the first thing on your docket? What would you really want to put right? If you have all power, all knowledge, everything, and you could maybe even click your fingers and something would change.
Well, first thing I would do is I would have a TV show like Suits for CPAs. That's the first thing.
Okay.
Because
good old Harvey Specter, right?
That's it. If we don't make it sexy, it's not going to sell to the next generation. So the first thing I would do is cast, let's see, who would I cast? I don't even know, but I'd cast somebody in that role that made it truly understood what it is we do.
Yeah.
Because it's not the way that it looks. Yes, there are certainly areas that are really struggling, but you're going to find with AI and quite frankly, with offshoring, that a lot of the first 3 years of accounting can be a much easier haul than it was. So number one, make it sexy. But I would do it in a format that would be, like I stated, like Suits. Make it truly understand what we do and how we do it in a fun way, because that's what young people see. You know, they see all these shows that glorify what they're doing, and some of it's right, some of it's wrong. I get that. So that'd be number one. And I think number two is I do think we have to figure out how that when a young person starts, we have to do a better job at the training portion. And I'm as guilty as many in that, is that the training part of this is really important. And back to my friends in Texas, you know, they have a fabulous training process that you go through, just like a huge firm. And they're just a little bit bigger than me. And they've been able to figure that out. So they do world-class casts. They hyper-focus on making sure the customer is where they are serving the customer. But in order to do that, they have to do that really heavy in-depth training. Mm. So it's neat to see these firms that are doing things that you don't do and you want to emulate them. I think those are the two things I would do.
Well, you hired. You start Monday, so clear your desk.
Oh, yeah. I'd raise partner income by $2 or $3 million.
Okay. I'm sure that won't be a problem. You can fund that. Mike, just last question. What excites you most about the future of accounting? You're a very upbeat, optimistic guy. You're a great ambassador for the brand of accounting, and you're out there doing it and changing things. It seems exciting for you. What is giving you most hope for the future?
Well, I always believe, you know, when I started in accounting, I thought the best had been behind me.
Yeah.
Right? My old man you could throw a dart at a piece of property and make money. And it was a fantastic time economically. And then of course I started in accounting and boom, like this.
Yeah. We missed the glory days.
Yeah. I think that the number one thing I would say is that the wealth of the world is in small business. I don't care what you hear on the media. I don't care how many times we talk about Apple. The wealth of every country is in the small businesses. And CPAs, young CPAs and older CPAs need to focus on the business side, because that's where the fun is. That's where the dynamic is. And that's where the money is. So I think that's the thing that I would really want to look at. And what I look at is, you know, when I just met somebody the other day and they became a client. And he invented this product, and it's just fantastic. And I, you know, it's one of those things where you say, how come, Rob, you and I didn't have a beer and invent this product?
Yeah.
And he's going to have probably 75 employees in the first 6 months, you know, and that is so exciting to be a part of. Mm-hmm. That's what really drives us, is that beautiful growth that you see in all these businesses. You kind of hear some bad news out of the media. It's always bad. But what we'd love to see is that just excitement when you have a small firm growing and needing the advice and the counsel that you give them. And it's a great relationship. So that's what I'd love to do.
That's a wonderful message of hope and inspiration. Mike Hajak, thank you so much for your passion and your insights today.
Rob, thank you very much. I appreciate the time.
This has been the Inside Public Accounting Podcast. It is a new show that is really making waves and telling the stories behind the numbers. Thank you so much, all of you, for joining us today, spreading the word. do drop on the website and wherever you find the show and share it and follow us. We'll see you on the next episode of the show, and go out there and make a difference. And if this has inspired you to do anything, then a more advisory mindset, true consulting, Mike Hajak has inspired us today. Have a great day, whatever you're doing, and go out there and make a difference.